So are we going to talk about how to make HIPAA easy, or are we going to talk about the rant that is HIPAA made easy?
Well, yes.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. How's it going, Donna Grindle of Cardin?
It's going well, David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs and Security First IT.
I know. It's just a long thing here.
Mine's so short, it's freaking you out.
I know. I can't get used to that. Just Cardin.
Just Cardin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too simple. Now maybe I have to figure out how to make it complicated.
Yeah. Maybe you can shorten it. You know, the artist formerly known as Cardin. Oh.
And we're off.
So let's start out with a Twitter question that came in actually as we were about to hit record.
Oh, yes. So the Twitter question. What we plan to answer, I don't know, because David said he was going to take the answer. So
so it could be interesting.
The Twitter question came in from Gene, at Gene Lichtman on Twitter. And the question is, at Help Me with HIPAA, are there any generally accepted HIPAA certifications or accredited training programs?
So, very good question. So other than the HIPAA for MSPs one, I guess I have other questions about the question. I'm not sure what generally accepted necessarily means. It's not accepted. There's nothing accepted by OCR. So I think he's asking beyond that. So the good thing is I don't know that there's any that are generally not accepted. But there are some that are better than others.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, there are some better than others. So you may have people that will say, you know, give you some links to some and say, these are the ones that we recommend because they are, you know, they're good in the content that they provide. However, certifications are kind of like most certifications in an industry, whereby the people in the industry understand what they are. The people outside the industry have no earthly idea what you're talking about. In the IT industry, we have this problem a lot where IT people love to chase these certifications and they put them all over their website, but then their clients have no earthly idea what they even mean. So they're great for showing other IT people about your knowledge, not so great for marketing, which is what people try to do with them. So I think that's kind of the same thing here. If you have a HIPAA certification, it's not a bad thing in and of itself, as long as you understand what it means and doesn't mean. Marketing that certification may mean nothing to the people you're marketing it to. It may mean a little bit to the people within the HIPAA sphere.
Yeah, well, and the ones that we generally recommend, if you're going for, well, that's a feather in the cap kind of thing, I guess, is the privacy focus is the one that is the Healthcare Compliance Association. They have the certified in healthcare privacy compliance, which is what I have there. So I figured it wouldn't be hard for me to get people to believe I knew security. But privacy is a different ballgame. Then you've got AHIMA, the American Health Information Management Association, offers the CHPS, the Certified HIPAA Privacy and Security one. And then HEMS has one. It's a HEMS, but it's focused on the IT part. So you can have the AHIMA that's both, and it's actually mentioned in some of the OCR documentation. And then you have the privacy and the security ones. And of course, you get those really high-end ones like you talk about, the CISSP.
Right.
Yeah. But there's plenty of options out there. And it's whether or not you want the ones where you take a 2 or 3 hour course or you take a 30-minute course and pass a test. The others are the ones where you go to the testing centers and they're, you know, monitored test and all that kind of stuff. So the ones I mentioned from HCCA, AHIMA and HIMSS, those are the serious go sit down, take a test.
Go sit down, take a test.
Yeah. Everything else is pretty much online.
Yeah. I would say that depending on what it is you're trying to get a certification in, you could probably determine its worth to some degree based on how long it takes you to take it.
Well, and, you know, I've done some of these where, you know, their objective is to sell more tests. So when you're taking the test, it has a timer, and every 3 questions, it tells you you failed if you missed even one. And, you know, people already have enough test anxiety. So be careful out there, people. Be careful.
Yeah.
Because OCR does not recognize any certification. Note to self.
Nope. No. So anyway, that's a roundabout way to answer that question. But we do get that a lot, which is, you know, all the HIPAA certifications out there, which ones are recognized? And, you know, they're all recognized by the people who put them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my next one, it's on my list, and you know, I just never get around to it, is the AHIMA one.
Mm-hmm.
And I already have the HCCA one. So.
Yep. But, you know, there are definitely some good ones. Donna brought up some. So look into those. So speaking of certifications, where are you going to be in the 2018 coming up?
Well, you know, that list is starting to grow now.
I see that. We might have to make a separate episode just for the list.
Well, you know, these things happen, David. So February 16th, I'm at the Georgia-South Carolina Joint Semi-Annual Conference and Trade Show for Ambulatory Surgical Centers that's here in Atlanta. That goes back and forth. This year it's in Atlanta. So I'm excited to be there. I'm going to be talking about ransomware. What?
That still happens?
Ransomware? Then on February 22nd, I am speaking at the HIPAA with the Experts Breakfast Seminar hosted by Hall Booth and Sterling Seacrest Partners. That one's going to be interesting. And I'm on the I'm the third speaker of the morning, so I don't know why I always have to go to the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm there with the OCR and some lawyers who really know this stuff. So I'm excited to be one of the experts. And then my cybersecurity officer course that I developed with Format Approved, those guys who do offer, they are one of the ones that do the online training that mixes with the live. So Gene, on the Twitter question, Format Approved, we do some stuff with. And one of those is the cybersecurity officer. And we explain how to use the NIST cybersecurity framework to be a cybersecurity officer. And they have a online version that is take it on your own, but periodically we do a live one where you get me there.
Oh.
So February 28th, March 1st, 7th, and 8th is the class dates, 1 hour per day. So, and if you want to sign up for those, you can go to Format Approved. And when you sign up, you can use Grindle20 for a nice little discount.
Nice.
Because you heard about it here. But there'll be links on the website. So you can check it out and be happy to hear if somebody from the podcast is on there. Let me know. Then April 12th, I'm going to be at the Lake Lanier chapter of Georgia MGMA, speaking for their luncheon. Then April 22nd through the 25th, I'm at the JAWS Society Annual Conference in Newport Beach, California. And we are actually looking into going out a couple of days early and setting up a seminar in Los Angeles with our friends Ray and Rob at Sphere.
Sphere, yeah.
Yeah. But Ray likes to call them a symposium because it sounds smarter. But we're looking at setting one of those up. So if you're interested in Los Angeles, let us know. or the Southern California area. We know some of you are there. And then June 14th at the North Georgia Medical Management Association in Dalton, Georgia. Woo! Northwest Georgia.
Cool.
I know. See, wow. I told you I was getting all these calls, and there's a couple more that, you know, I'm still working on because, you know, I get offers to go speak for free in, like, Birmingham and Charlotte.
I bet you
Virginia. And, you know, if I took all of the offers to speak for free, I don't really know how I'd make a living. So, you know, I do speak, and I am willing to barter for speakers' fees. And so it works out.
Yep.
But, you know, we always are open to ideas. But, yeah, I can't afford to do it for free anymore. Too many of them.
Oh, poor thing. Oh,
speaking of free.
You should win the lottery so you can do it for free.
You know, if I did, I might, because I do enjoy it.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Right.
So.
All right. So, speaking of other stuff and training and certifications and being recognized nationally, we have the HIPAA Boot Camp.
That's right.
Which is a live event. And we're still taking, I guess, comments on whether or not you would like to see a HIPAA Boot Camp be online versus in person. But for now, we're doing the in-person one. And we'll be scheduling one out here in the next little bit and announcing it.
Hopefully by the next recording, we'll at least have some idea of when we're doing it.
So. Right. So we'll have that done. And if you want some information on that and what it all covers, then go to helpmewithhipaa.com/bootcamp or thehipaabootcamp.com. You can see some of the information there. And it is absolutely a fire hydrant of information. to obtain. So, but it's been great. The ones we've done, lots of good feedback on that. Also, if you want to help keep the lights on, you can go to helpmewithhipaa.com/give and become a Patreon and give as little as 25 cents a week to the cause.
Help us out.
I know. Thanks for those people who are doing that. We appreciate it. Definitely. If you find value in it, it does help to pay some of the cost involved in producing the podcast. Also, we have a Help Me With HIPAA app, so go get the app. There's PDFs there for show notes, and you can use that as your training documentation. Has to be worth at least a quarter a week, I'm sure. Don't forget to review us and like us on Facebook and all the other places we are on the World Wide Web. So that brings us to our topic for today. We're going to talk about HIPAA Made Easy.
I know. I've had it.
So are we going to talk about how to make HIPAA easy, or are we going to talk about the rant that is HIPAA Made Easy?
Well, yes.
So we get this question a lot, and we see it a lot in marketing materials. And for those of you who have been listening for a long time, you know that drives us crazy. Because there are ways to simplify your HIPAA processes, but to tell people that you can make HIPAA easy and it's just do this one thing and you're done, not really cool.
No, and a lot of people that say it's easy, they're supplying one piece, mm-hmm. one tiny piece of what's supposed to be done. So, yeah, it drives us crazy, and we know it's marketing, and everybody, oh, it's just marketing. Well, no, it's not just marketing. When you've got people that are up against all these things. So today we're going to review a list of things that you need to be doing if you're doing HIPAA properly. Now, again, it can be very easy if you're not going to do it properly.
You're right. It is.
But if you're going to do it properly, you absolutely need to do certain things. And we now, with the OCR effort rating, we can make it very clear on what's acceptable and what's not, because there's tons of people that would be getting a 4, which we have now translated into A, B, C, D, and F. People get those grades, at least some of us do. And
I won't say anything. I told my stepson the other day, he came home and yeah, I think he made a C and his mom's going crazy. I'm like, way to go, be an underachiever. She's like, you're not helping.
So, but it, by and large, most people are getting D's and they don't even realize it because they're using HIPAA Made Easy.
Maybe we should change the title to HIPAA Made Easy or Properly. Pick one.
Yeah, that's it. HIPAA Made Easy? Question mark. That's what it's going to be. So first, let's start with the difference between an OCR audit and an investigation.
Oh, yeah.
Because people always say, if I do this, will I pass an audit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when they're talking about pass, you know, I even saw this. Our clients recently passed an OCR audit. Okay, again, not something that I could say that, but it's not going to be helpful because the issue is the OCR audit is the random audit program is one that is part of high tech, and there's been less than 500 actual audits done.
Right.
Those aren't frequent. They are narrow and different. Then you have the OCR investigation. Those happen all the time. And that's what you need to pay attention to. An investigation happens when there's been a complaint filed or you've had to report a data breach or you end up in the news mm-hmm. and you get a notification from OCR like, hey, how you doing? Saw you in the news. Mm-hmm. Got to ask you a few questions about it. So know that if an OCR audit happened, it was asking about one or two very specific things. And by the by, no one was making eights on the audits the last round.
Right.
So what they look for in an investigation, which is where you're more likely, you're statistically way more likely. They do thousands of those every year. So you're much more likely to have an investigation, and these are the kinds of things you need to worry about in your HIPAA Made Easy.
This just doesn't even sound right coming from your mouth.
we're working with some groups that either it's new companies or they never had to worry about HIPAA before and now they do because they're changing things. And then some that should have been worried about it and haven't taken it seriously. They've been getting a D or an F. But we've been doing more and more of these. Let's just build a program from scratch and take whatever you have and we'll plug it in. So we kind of go through a process with them. And everybody's worried about policies and procedures. Can you give me my policies and procedures? We did a whole episode on policy and procedure templates.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think of those, David?
Oh, Lord. It's, you know, well, the whole gist of the episode was that in and of themselves, they're not necessarily bad. People just don't use them properly. They, you know, they either don't fill them out properly or at all, and they put them on a shelf somewhere. So,
yeah. If your policies and procedures manual is in a 3-ring binder that has a really nice spine on it that says HIPAA manual, and you open it up and you go about midway through it and you still have policies and procedures that say your name here because no one ever finished, I'm going to say you're going to get a D.
Unless you're lucky.
Maybe
it's the your name here medical practice. You should probably do that.
I know. Yeah, just change the name of your practice. Your business is now your name here. Now my policies and procedures work, and I don't have to update anything. My templates are there. Because what we run into is that's what everybody starts with, and I'm always like, how can you start there when you don't even know what you have to worry about? And we know there are certain policies and procedures that you must have, but how do you fill in the answers to what you're supposed to be doing in those policies and procedures if you don't know what you have to protect? You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. So we always start with you need a policy and procedure on policies and procedures. That's the first policy and procedure you need. So I need a policy and procedure on how I'm going to write, manage, and maintain archives of my documentation for my policies and procedures and contracts and operational evidence. So start
that,
there.
Yeah, and that usually is where everybody stops.
I know. They're like, what?
Yeah, I can't do all that.
Yeah. So, but you have to have a plan, because otherwise, when they send you, remember this investigation, you get a list of things and you've got 10, 14 days to provide them, if you're lucky, 14. So 10 business days, boom. So you're going to have to pull all that, and they could ask for something that's 5 years ago and you need to pull it. And if you don't have a plan for knowing where that information is, how are you going to get it all together? Because it's not like one or two things. You know, you've got two or three pages of things that you might get requested.
That's when you call Cardin and you say, can you backdate this?
We do get those requests.
I'm sure you do.
Particularly when people have their meaningful use audit.
Oh, goodness. The meaningful usefulness, uselessness.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody says, yeah, we did a risk analysis. And they attest to it, and we know plenty of people that had to give money back because they attested to these things and didn't actually do them. And, you know, and couldn't even find them. They just said, yeah. But that's what everybody says about HIPAA. It's so easy. But your policies and procedures that everybody thinks they have to start with, now, if you're a covered entity, you do have to have the privacy ones. And when we look at the things that people consistently do wrong on the privacy ones, it's their NPP, is their notice of privacy practices, isn't properly, it doesn't cover the things properly. They'll have four different versions of it. They won't have it in the right places. You can't find it anywhere. You know, my favorite thing to do is go in and ask for a copy of the NPP. And people just are like, I know we got one here somewhere. And I was like, well, you're wanting me to sign this form that says I've seen it?
Yeah.
But I haven't.
Right.
And, you know, and they'll have one that they'll hand out to you. They'll have one that's maybe somewhere in the waiting room. And then they'll have another one on the website, if at all. And they don't match. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have actual procedures on how you address patient requests for information and their records that meet the new guidance, which, yes, it does include that you no longer can just say it's $25 for a copy of your records. You know, there's a $650 option, or you can show why it cost you $25. Pick one. So those are the things in privacy policies and procedures that are usually done incorrectly. Now, the rest of this stuff is all about security. And yay, that covers both covered entities and business associates, and they're doing all of that wrong. So, first thing they ask for, David, and you just talked about this.
Yeah, the security risk analysis.
I'd like to, what was it you say that you ask client, you know, prospects now when you go in?
I just started with a new client first of the week, I believe it was. And we went in for, I guess you could say, a sales call. And near the end of it, the 3-hour sales call. I kept trying to make some, you know, headway into what are you doing with compliance and talking about how we address some of the stuff, you know, IT related. Just wasn't seem to get much traction. And then near the end, I just finally said, okay, I need your security risk analysis that you've most recently done, preferably one that you've done in previous 5 years. I also need to see your mini risk analysis that you've done. I need to see your workstation use policy. I need to see your password management policy. And by that time, it was like, you could just tell on the face of the people I was talking to that they were in trouble. and then after I was done, they said, well, what if we don't have any of that? And I said, I have a person that can help you.
Let me have Cardin call you.
Yep. So, but, you know, as much as I do not like using fear tactics, but I do like educating people. And so that was the process of educating through whatever method you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
but you should be asking for those and getting them as a new IT provider.
Well, yeah, I need them. I have to have those. Otherwise, I am setting up your environment different from your policy and procedure.
What a concept. You know, if you have on-site IT staff, they probably should know what the policies and procedures say and make sure that that's actually what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have outsourced IT, it's no different. They should know what your policies and procedures say and make sure that's what they're doing, or align their practices with your policies and procedures. One or the other. Something's got to happen.
Yeah. And if you're making changes to that, you know, if you decide you're going to change your workstation use policy, you need to let IT know so that they can make any changes necessary so that you're doing things the way you said you are.
Yeah, and you bring in a new IT company, they need to understand how you're going to have them involved in your onboarding and termination checklist.
Mm-hmm, especially termination. Whew.
Yeah. No, you got to get these people. We've talked about this before. We just did a whole onboarding and termination session episode. So, yes, your security risk analysis should cover a lot of those things that your IT provider's got to worry about and make sure that they have a plan for, which brings us to the next piece. For every one of your security risk analysis, you should have a corresponding risk management plan that says, here's what we're going to do, and here's how we're going to manage these risks or fix our problems where our gaps are between what we should be doing and what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So you should have a corresponding risk management plan that, again, the IT folks better know what's in there, because if you say you're going to replace your server in the next 3 years and the IT people don't even know it, how are they going to help you do it?
Right.
You know? And they may have ideas, and they may know about deals, and they may know about how to help you plan for the cost.
Right. Or you may be moving to a cloud server, or maybe you want to go to a data center. I mean, there's so many options out there, and especially 3 years down the road, who knows what we'll be doing.
Right. I mean, you have no way of knowing, but if it's part of the plan and part of your annual review, which you should be having with your IT provider,
mm-hmm.
is a regular review of your technology plan. You should have a budgeted technology plan. I don't care what kind of business you're in. People have to do that now if you are in any kind of business. So you have a risk management plan, you have security risk analysis, then you have a training program that trains people on doing what's in your policies and procedures.
Right.
So, you know, either you do generic HIPAA, which is, by the way, one of the things listed for getting a D is generic training.
Generic.
Or you have training that relates to your actual policies and procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk about, this is our policy, and this is why we do it, and so on and so forth.
Yep.
So we start training on generic stuff, but do it in our own special way. but then we start adding in. And now as we're doing our new policy and procedure solution, you know, the training is something where we can get even more involved on your actual policies and procedures.
Cool.
So, yeah.
And then you do the security awareness training as well, right?
Yes. Security awareness is very different than HIPAA training, people.
Yeah.
That's included. You got to do that. Got to do that. It's part of your HIPAA made easy.
Yeah. You should be doing that regardless.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so difficult to keep up with the security aspects nowadays. I don't see how businesses can function without it.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's something everybody should do. It has nothing to do with HIPAA. Yeah. HIPAA says you have to do it, but you really should be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just reiterating the need that's already there. And with the security awareness stuff, if you know, I saw a discussion about, you know, so-and-so said you need to send something out every month, and that's not necessarily what the rule is, but what should you do? And, you know, let's not split hairs on what the rule says. The rule says you need to do security awareness training. Common sense says, mm-hmm. if I'm going to have somebody be aware, then I've got to reiterate it regularly. So how often do you need to tell your people stuff for them to pay attention?
All the time.
Spoken like a business owner.
Yeah. Well, it goes into what we talk about. You know, everybody wants to throw around the phrase, create a culture of compliance. You can't create a culture of anything on a once a year, you know, training retreat or come in on a Saturday or whatever the case might be. You're not going to create anything other than...
Yeah, the 45-minute HIPAA training that I have with the Lunch and Learn.
Right, yeah.
In January.
Not a good idea.
Yeah. I always love it when I see the last training we did was in January. I'm like, oh, and it's December, not January.
Right.
You know what's going on. So it is important, and it's important that you have training that might be specific to someone's job, which is a perfect segue into the next piece. You have to manage business associates. It's not, oh, we have a business associate template and we sign them, the agreements. Mm-hmm. That's not what you have to do. I mean, you supply chain, the NIST cybersecurity framework, which we mentioned earlier, they, in their first update, are adding supply chain management in there because it's like a number one thing that all the cybersecurity people are like, nothing in this original one that came out years ago is addressing our business associates, which is supply chain. That's what business associates are. And they can get you in a lot of trouble if you're not paying attention. So you need to make sure you have the proper contracts in place that require them to do the things that you want them to do. You know, I just reviewed one where somebody was complaining about a business associate agreement that told them they needed to let the covered entity know about any kind of data breach within 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's not unreasonable, right?
Right.
We're used to seeing that. They complained and said, as we see it, the statute says we have 60 days.
Oh my gosh.
What? And you know, my clients are like, what do you even say to this? So, and that was just one of like six problems they had that were ridiculous. Oh. So, you know, I gave a very matter-of-fact response.
Right.
But it's those kind of things when you've got people that, you know, that are supposed to be making sure they sign the contract and that they don't know there's a reason that you have it the way that it's 5 days, and they come back and say, well, they want it 60, and you have people that are like, okay, well, that's what they want. You got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and the due diligence, and what level of due diligence should I worry about based on the risk factors of all of my different supply chain vendors, my business associates, and which ones of my supply chains, even though they may not be a business associate, which ones do I need to make sure I'm aware of what they're doing? I don't know, the Allscripts people right now may have wished they asked a few more questions and had some of these other things that we're about to hit in your HIPAA Made Easy list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then the next piece, that gets to back to what we were talking about as far as your IT vendor, which is having, this is the thing that most people think that, in fact, this line, security tools, controls, audits, and assessments. That's what I put there. But security tools and controls is what most people think HIPAA is. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I had that question this morning. It was, if I use this particular firewall, does that make me HIPAA compliant? And I'm like, oh, God.
Really?
Yes.
No, you hadn't told me about that.
I know. but it was a conversation about that. I'm like, no, it's not a device thing.
No, I mean, it's not wave a magic wand. It's not that easy. So a lot of the HIPAA Made Easy tools are the ones that are security tools, or they're ones that do your quick assessment, meaning run this little program and answer these questions and you're good to go for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Those are problematic. Now, there's some things that'll say, hey, we're going to run monitors and we're going to alert you. Great. Love those. But they do not make you HIPAA compliant all by themselves. In fact, if you ignore their alerts, it doesn't help you at all.
Right.
So, you know, somebody's got to be paying attention and reviewing all of these tools that you put in place. And, you know, we were just looking today at a policy and procedure template that said that we're going to do an analysis of all the logs, right? Mm. And you know, the IT provider's like, okay, well, good luck with that.
Yeah. I'll send you the 400 pages a day you want to look at.
Yeah. You know, it's like, really? You have to have a plan for some of this stuff. And those templates are setting you up for that failure right away.
Because I've got one. I'm negotiating a business associate agreement right now that has that verbiage in it.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I know. See, now there's another thing, is that there's things in the law that it says have to be in the contract, but if you don't pay attention to what's in the contract, then you're messing yourself up again. So if you're a business associate and you sign a contract that says, what is the verbiage it usually says? That you were just any kind of scan?
Yeah, pretty much any scan, any type of security incident, you know, they'll get, the client will be notified. And I'm like,
including scans and pings and.
Right. Yeah. You know. Well, any attempted security or incident or something to that effect. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you have no idea what you're asking.
Yeah. And so somebody put that in the law, and clearly they don't understand how often that's happening. So you can actually put a stipulation that says, well, we understand there's a certain amount of that occurs, but you're going to let us know if anything actually is serious.
Right.
You know, and of course there's language about that, but yeah, people.
It sounds great on paper.
But in practice, it's only going to make you angry when you know, here's your list of things that happened and everybody on both ends does nothing with it. So those assessments and the audits to make sure that the controls are in place and that somebody's looking at those things very much matters. Mm-hmm. So if you have a HIPAA made easy tool that's supposedly doing it all for you, who's looking at it?
Right. Know?
Because at some point, a human's going to have to make a decision or do something.
And it's ultimately the covered entity's responsibility to look at it, even if somebody else is, right?
Well, you know, it depends on what their policy and procedures say. And if somebody is supposed to be monitoring what's happening. Now, at what level do you do the monitoring and what triggers the monitoring and all of that? You need to have something reasonable and appropriate for your environment. And there's a lot of automated tools that look, you know, there's automated tools that look at the network level and the system level and then the application level even. So you've got logs happening all through the way. And if you just have this generic statement that you're going to be looking at logs, how are you going to handle that? I don't know. You know, that the Sphere guys, theirs is looking at the application level. And you still have to go in there. And if the machine says, hey, this happened, what do you want me to do about it? Remember it and never tell you about it again. Make it an incident. Allow it to happen this one time, but let you know if it happens again. That's not a hard decision, but somebody's got to do it. A human has to be involved.
Right.
So, that being said, now we get into the nitty-gritty things that no one seems to have. A security incident response plan.
SERP.
So, okay. All right. So you are required to have that under the HIPAA regulations in the security rule. You're supposed to have an incident response plan. I don't know of any of the templates that really do that very well. And within that plan is where you would then go over to your breach notification policies and procedures that don't just simply say what the law says. Those are what most breach notification policies and procedures do, is they say, this is what the law says we're going to do, so that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
But your incident response plan, you need to know who you're going to call, David.
Carden. I love doing this to, you know, you have those clients that you know aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and you're trying your best to help them, but they want to ignore it. I love when you get those calls that, you know, something's happened, and I'll go, well, you need to implement your incident response plan immediately. And they're like, what? I'm like, you know, that thing that we talked about like a dozen mm-hmm. times, you keep saying you don't need it.
that thing. You know, and an incident response plan isn't, we're going to write this stuff down and we're going to do what the law says. No, an incident response plan, you know, that incident response plan is your crisis plan. And that's the way I try to break it down, because you got three plans you need to have, and most people don't really have any of them. They think they do. But once they learn a few things, they realize they don't. So you have the crisis plan. Who do I call? Who's going to make decisions? Who has access to money? Who is going to make sure that we're covered legally? And who is going to do forensics? And how are we going to get all of this information? What's our communication tool? Who's going to be in charge of documentation? It's a litany of things for crisis management that you should just know. Everybody knows what they're going to do. Everybody knows what their part is. And you make the call and say, hey, we have a crisis. Everybody knows who's involved and what their job is. Number one. Then you have the, how am I going to keep the business running now that I've had a crisis until I get back to normal? And that's your business continuity plan.
Yeah. That,
all of the people that are having a fit about all scripts being down this week, mm-hmm. last week, all they're doing is screaming, I don't have a business continuity plan. You know, yeah, I know they're down, but when you're turning away patients and you're saying, hey, we can't treat anybody, all you're doing is screaming, I don't have a business continuity plan.
Yeah. And this happens in all types of businesses. We just went through this last weekend with a restaurant chain that could not accept credit cards for the weekend.
Oh, no.
So my question to the CEO was, what is your business continuity plan for not being able to accept credit cards? And the only thing they had was pull out the knuckle busters and swipe the cards.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, you know, most cards don't have raised print on them any longer. So the waitresses and waiters were having to write down the information. They weren't told what information was needed. So I think we estimated they lost about $14,000 over the weekend of cards they couldn't process because the information was incorrectly written down or not received at all. So people got a lot of free meals.
Yeah. And, you know, having just like, you know, every office has a mobile device with Square on it.
Right. Yeah. Something. Yeah. There needs to be something.
You know, that you have that and it slows things down, but it's going to be cheaper than $14,000.
And you know, just to let you know what the problem was, you know what it ended up being?
What?
The software had a Java update that broke something. And that was it.
And here we talk about patching and patching and patching.
Yep.
But that's what happened.
Well, the software was based off of an old version of Java, and it wouldn't work on the newer version. So when Java decided to update itself, it broke it. Took all weekend to get support on the line to figure that out.
And the vendor, not any help.
No, not at all. I mean, they had to have a level 3 tech discover that.
So you got to wonder how many other people were down that didn't have a professional IT company trying to solve the problem.
I know.
So, yeah. That happens in restaurants a lot, I'm sure. So you've got
business continuity.
Business continuity plan. And it is things like, well, we take credit cards and now all of a sudden the credit card piece is down in my EHR. Mm-hmm. Am I going to tell the patients I'll send you a bill? Because that's going to be a lot harder to get your money. Isn't it better to say I'm going to have some backup solution that I have vetted and I'm aware of, and yes, I pay for it, but one time needing it, it will pay for years of having it.
Oh, yeah. One thing we're looking at right now, matter of fact, when we get done recording, I'll be testing it today, is a 4G failover device. So yeah. If you
can't
lose,
wait to hear how that goes.
I know. So if you lose your internet connectivity, it'll fail over to like a, you know, Verizon account type setup. So you still have internet access, which is a huge deal because a lot of people have cloud-based EHR.
Well, yeah, I mean, most people can't function without internet access today in some right. way.
Yep.
And so, it, yes, it'll be slow, but it'll be a connection,
mm-hmm.
which is huge. But, yeah, that's part of business continuity, is how do I continue to run my business, service our customers, our patients, our clients, whoever it is, and maintain some semblance of order with people being able to do their jobs while I deal with the crisis. So that means there's going to be somebody in charge of that business continuity stuff that's not actually dealing with the crisis. Now, if you got one person in charge of crisis management, business continuity, and then we get to disaster recovery, how well do you think you're going to be able to do any of these? That's yeah. where you bring in your vendors, like your you need to know your attorneys and your compliance, your privacy and security advisors like us,
mm-hmm.
and your IT people like David. You bring all those people in and they all work together. And then you have the actual disaster recovery, which is getting us back to normal.
So when Outlook doesn't work, is that disaster recovery? Because most people think it is.
Yeah, it's a disaster. Well, most people, when you say, do you have a disaster recovery plan, they will actually say, we have a backup.
Right. Yeah.
That's not a disaster recovery
plan. Part of it.
I mean, even under HIPAA, it's two separate line items under the HIPAA security rule. So, you know, there's a backup, but it's like, okay, well, let's say you've got a backup and you have no place to restore it. I mean, there's no computer. It burned. It burned. It's gone. It's gone. Or it died because you had it too long, you know? But more often than not, it's, you know, well, the building burned down. It got hit by lightning and fried everything. A flood happened. Those are always painful.
Yeah. Well, in IT, we, you know, we're bad about this. We sell, quote unquote, we sell disaster recovery solutions, right? But that's not really what you're talking about here. You're talking about how to recover your entire operation, not just be able to get back to your data.
Right. Getting back to your data is one single element of disaster recovery plan. Yes, you need to have a backup. Yes, you need to have duplicate copies of it and multiple copies, and they need to be tested and they need to be offsite. And, you know, you need layers and layers of copies of your data. Yes, that's a backup plan, not a disaster recovery plan.
Yep.
It is an element of a disaster recovery plan. But when you say, all right, walk into your office tomorrow morning or Monday morning, if you're listening on Friday, and you say, all right, do we have, let's imagine that none of these devices are available to me tomorrow, but I have a backup. Now what am I going to do? That's a disaster recovery plan. So where am I going to, what is my, you know, I can't do business in this facility for whatever reason, you know, and oh, well, I don't live in a floodplain. I'm in a desert, so I don't have to worry about flooding. Do you have water in pipes? Because anywhere in the building, you know, we have a case where, you know, a story where somebody, their office was flooded because a toilet problem in the office next door happened over the weekend. And it just spewed water out till it started coming through the walls. So, you know, flooding's going to happen. You got to figure out where that's going to come from unless you don't have water. So there you have it. Those are your HIPAA made easy things.
And then you got to, you know, keep doing it all over and over again too.
Yeah. It's an infinite loop.
Yeah.
So there is why it drives us crazy when people say HIPAA made easy. Almost all of the cases where it's HIPAA made easy, they're handling one element, maybe two elements of what has to happen here. And people believe they're done, and they're not.
I want to be done.
I know. I think I'm done. I'm done for today.
All righty, folks. That's our show then. You should now know HIPAA can't be made easy.
Well, that's just how to make it easy. Do all of those things, and then it's easy.
Yeah, it's always easy. It's easy to call Card and have them help you out. That's the way I see it.
We are your advisors. We are here for you.
Well, with that new policy and procedure thing you're developing, that's taking a huge chunk of work off people. So
yeah, it's pretty cool. So we may have to do a whole episode explaining that, but then that's giving away, you know, the secret sauce.
Oh, we don't want to do that. All right, folks.
That's it.
Yeah, please remember to follow us and share us out on your favorite social media site. You can also rate us in podcasting apps. We really need your help to spread the word. Helps other people find us so they can find out how to make it easy. And as always, you can send in your questions and ideas. Donna usually takes the questions. I take the ideas. And remember, as always, the HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.